and welcome. It's another weekly Mayo Best Bits of Drive Time from the last few days, this time without an audience. Well, you know, a big, big audience, but not a live audience. You know what I'm saying? We're not in Edinburgh. This week, Catherine Tate was in to talk about a new series of David Walliams' Big School. The Radio 2 Book Club welcomed author Linda Newbury, and Nigel was making us some delicious lamb burgers, though obviously you'll be the judge of that. Catherine Tate, it's very nice to see you. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
New series of the David Walliams penned series, Big Schools, back on BBC One. Is it Friday at 9:30?
9:30.
And the reason why we were talking about careers advice earlier is because in the show, you play the French teacher,
yes.
Sarah Poster.
Yes.
And you've got like this careers advisory afternoon going on, or this big. So just explain what happens.
She's taken the initiative to do a careers day advice, this kind of workshop thing for all the kids that are leaving, which results into mayhem, and there's no particularly good advice.
We've got loads of and loads of people just contributing the careers advice that they got, but it's in the, just explain the setup in the school for anyone who's who hasn't caught up with it.
Oh, the show is set in a secondary school, and they're fairly unruly kids and teachers, really.
It's a rubbish school, isn't it?
I think they call it, yes, it's on a downward turn.
That's right.
Upwardly failing.
It's not going to get an Ofsted outstanding,
I don't
is it?
Think so. No.
And you play
a rather delusional French teacher who I think she thinks she's on her way to teaching at Cambridge, but she's really not. But she started an initiative for careers advice. And I think there's if it's made the cut, there's a part where she's explaining that she really does speak Chinese.
Yes, that has made the cut.
Has it?
Yes. Which is a very funny section. And David Walliams has said one of the bits that he knew that you'd have fun with is the bit where you, having pretended, you told this thing about not lying on your CV.
Don't lie on your CV. And then on my CV it says I speak five languages. And one of the languages she professes to speak is Chinese. And then Phil Glenister's character, asked me to prove it. But maybe she does speak Chinese.
Maybe.
Maybe she does.
Yes. Or maybe it's an eyebrow-raising version.
Maybe it is.
Chinese. I'm just going to play a clip right from the beginning of the show just to set the character. So tell us where David Walliams fits in with you and your character.
With my character, because I don't know what bit you're about to play.
Okay. Shall I play it and then you can explain it?
You play it and I'll hum it.
All right, here we go.
Sarah, I just wanted to say it's a shame our dinner over the holidays didn't work out.
It's not nice for a woman to be stood up.
I didn't stand you up. Who could have known the town had two Bella Italias?
I did give you the address.
Yes, but I saw a Bella Italia in the town square and presumed you'd got the address wrong.
I didn't get it wrong.
Well, you could have got it wrong.
But I didn't get it wrong. You got it wrong.
So, did you enjoy your meal?
Of course I didn't. I wasn't going to sit there on my own all night.
Yes, I just had the bread and dips while I was waiting. Then I had the spaghetti carbonara, followed by the tiramisu. After the cheese selection, I assumed you weren't coming, so I just had a coffee and some of those little almond biscuits.
Sounds like you had a very nice evening.
Yes, and it was very reasonably priced. We should go again.
Same restaurant or separate ones?
Same one this time.
Mm. We'll see.
So it's that bit?
It's that bit, yes. They've been trying. They're a bit of misguided lovers, really. There's an attraction, but I think both of their obtuse personalities repels them against each other, and yet they kind of come together. And this episode starts. There's been a date supposedly supposed to have happened in the holidays, but they both went to different Bella Italias. Would you?
Who'd have thought
it?
That there were two Bella Italias in any town?
In any town. Who'd have thought you'd need them?
The moment that we realise you're delusional, just in this series, to quote you, is where you start referring yourself to yourself in the third person.
The third person, yes. Yes. So can Sarah Poston do this? And he keeps saying, you are Sarah Poston. And she keeps going, yes, I know.
But it's always the first sign of... it's something that happens a bit in show business circles. And there is a thing which I have called in the past DJ madness, in which you always know that someone has got it if they refer to themselves in the third person.
Yes.
Now, I'd imagine you must have worked with quite a few actors over the years.
People who talk about themselves as if they're not in the room.
Yes.
Or they're not themselves.
Yes, exactly.
It's a rather uncomfortable thing to be around, I think, when someone is speaking on behalf of themselves.
I know this is a ridiculous observation, but while I was watching episode one of the new series, I started to get nervous about the start of term.
Yeah.
It's just something when the air turns and it's all autumn in the air, yeah, and the back-to-school posters are up, yes, and there's queues waiting for shoes. You think there's just a moment where the butterflies start in your stomach, yeah, and then you realise, no, it's fine, you haven't been to school
for a while.
Four decades or something like that. Do you still get that? Were you still nervous at the start of every term?
No, I was excited, actually. And I always still think now, I always still think of September being the beginning of the year rather than January, because I've still, bizarrely, I never let go of that school mentality. So I like the idea that I always feel autumn is my spring, because it's the beginning of the year.
But it's the move to big school, and that's the scary thing. That's, yeah, the scary thing, making that step up.
Yeah, it is.
The careers advice that we've received, okay, goes like this. H in Nottingham says, my husband said he wanted to be an archaeologist. He was sent to work down the coal mine. Catherine in Bristol, same with regards to career advice in school. My year all had to sit one of those computer tests that determine which path is set for you. Turns out my year were all destined, or so this programme thought, to become vicars or different members of the clergy.
Wow.
It's been 7 years since we left and not one of us has become a preacher.
Member of the cloth.
What kind of
programme is
that? Test is that going to be? And on a similar, well, maybe this is the same test. Doug Aldred, who is a musician, he adds, we did a computerised careers survey in the 90s at our school on the Isle of Wight. Despite everyone answering differently, our whole class were told that we were going to be tractor drivers.
Wow.
So that's the level of career advice that they've had.
I challenged my career advisor, and I went to school not very far from around here. I went to school in Covent Garden, and then, well, actually, and then over in Southwark for the secondary school. But I said that I really wanted to be a farmer, which I was desperate to become a farmer, but there were no farms in London. There were no courses for that. And so they said, well, you know, we're a little bit strapped for farmland and marshland, so can you think of something else? And I said, yeah, I'd love to be a skiing instructor. And the woman was like, oh, my goodness, anything else? And I said, well, yeah, I'd like to be a show jumper. And he said, look, is there anything else? And I said, well, all right, then what about acting? And he sort of trundled over to a file and got me some rubbishy old leaflet about performing arts. And that's how it happened for me, because there were no farms in London. It had been a very different story if there were.
What on earth made you want to be a farmer?
Oh, that was my dream. I think maybe it was because growing up not on a farm. I'm sure if you grow up on a farm, you know that there's no fairy tale aspect to it, but that's all I wanted to do, was work with animals and work on a farm.
6:23, Catherine Tate is here, new series of Big School, BBC One, Friday 9:30. So you're not going to be a farmer, so you've been turned, you know,
no,
obviously there are no farms.
Too late.
And then a whole variety of other jobs which you suggested,
yes,
and then eventually you go, all right then, an
all
actor.
Right then. Oh, all right then, go on.
But was that, but did
no, it was.
Had you ever acted at school? I mean, was that.
I did, yeah, I did like. I did like to do the plays and stuff, but it wasn't really till I was about 19 or something that I thought I'd. I mean, I went to the National Youth Theatre, and with David went as well, David Williams, and Matt, and I think it was a good place for everyone to start off and do plays and things like that. But no, it wasn't my first love. Pig farming was.
Yes. Well, you know, an alternative to create a fallback on, you know.
I hope. Please, God, you never know.
In later years. Of course, these Radio 2 studios are sort of like the back of your hand, really. You know exactly where you are, because you did, with the other David Tennant, you did some fabulously chaotic shows.
Very chaotic, yes.
I thought they, you know, they were one of. Did David control the desk and you sit opposite, or did you both?
I think yes, we did. He did control the desk because I'm a technophobe. But then, no, I had a screen in front of me as well, as I remember, and it was very precarious when it came to my turn to push a button.
So you're not intending to return to the radio studio
anytime
soon?
I don't think so. I don't know.
In the acting stakes, just on that subject, you spent some time with the Royal Shakespeare Company, didn't you?
I did. Funnily enough, I did about 10 years ago the one before this version of the show that James Corden did. It was called One Man, Two Governors,
yes,
which is based on a Goldoni
very
show.
Successful.
Yes, called Master of Two Servants. I did the Lee Hall one, which was about 10 years ago. I did that with the RSC.
And you, I think you were just with them for about a year. But when you went back to do Shakespeare again with David Tennant, yes. In Much Ado, again, that sounded as though you were doing it because you had so much fun. My entire family yes. went to that. I couldn't do it because I was on air at the time. But it was clear that you were just having a ball.
We were. And it was really, it was kind of our, it was sort of our MO to do the show in the first place. It was, let's do it together. Let's have a great laugh while we do it. And we said to Josie Rook, who directed it brilliantly, we want it to be a romp. We want people to really have a great time. And that, yeah, and she set it in the 80s, which was very clever, because it just had a just had a good feel good energy to it.
Tempted to do more?
Definitely. Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. Dun, 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 dun. So, on a farm, now if you please, Sarah.
So I think this is one of those things where there are negotiations, and maybe you'll be doing it, but you're not. But you can't actually say anything.
Oh no, I'm not. There's no veil of secrecy. I'm just saying, no. I probably at some point will go back to do some theatre. Yeah,
no, sure. I was away at the weekend, and I didn't see the opening episode of Doctor Who. I just wondered once you're in the clan, are you just forever?
You're legally bound. I watched it. Oh my goodness, I loved it.
Did you?
I genuinely loved it. I think he's fantastic. Yeah, and I obviously say that with David being my doctor and being, you know, there's no division of loyalty. But as a, you know, as a huge admirer of Peter Capaldi, I thought he was magnificent.
And it'll be interesting to see a doctor who is clearly determined not to flirt with his assistants, because we've had a few years of flirting.
Yes. And also, someone, I felt he was revelling in it as well. I just thought he was fantastic, yeah.
Now, Catherine Tate is in Big School. It's back again. It's on Friday at 9:30. How many shows? Is it six?
Six, yeah.
And it's very, very funny. But I would like to say that the children's author that turns up and does a little signing at the end of the show, it's not really like that very much, but it is very, very funny. And look out for books by Fenella Forbes,
because
she sounds like an absolute hoot. Catherine, I really appreciate you coming in.
Pleasure, thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. Ready to Book Club. Today we offer you Linda Newbury's 2:15 on a Wednesday afternoon. Hello, Linda. How are you?
Hello. Fine, thank you.
Before we move on, we need to have a special announcement for your dad. Take it away.
Thank you. Well, it's my father's 91st birthday today, and he doesn't know that I'm here in the studio because I just said that I had to come to London.
Right. And what's his name?
Ronald.
So we say happy birthday, Ronald.
Thank you.
He's got a bit of a shock, really, because you're on the radio.
Is he listening?
I hope so.
Oh, yes.
He's been cued.
Okay. Right, so happy birthday. Okay, so, and you've done a present and a card and...
Oh, yes.
Yes, yeah. Okay. Is it a book that you've given him? Hey, happy birthday, Dad. Here's my new book.
I did give him that as well.
Excellent, yeah. That's very good. Okay, let's talk about the cover. Matt, do you want to go first? Do you want to describe the cover, please, that we're looking at here?
So, the whole of the front cover is taken up with a picture of two girls, in floral dresses, running away from the camera. And the title, 2:15 on a Wednesday afternoon. And we know that it's a serious book for two things. One is that we can't see the girls' faces.
Always important.
And that's always a big thing. If you can't see the faces,
that
it's an important
says it's
book.
Literary.
Yes, absolutely. And the other reason you know it's class is because we've got the Radio 2 Book Club sticker on it.
That's right. And actually, on our covers, it's not even a sticker. It's actually part of the cover.
Oh, yeah.
How cool is that?
It looks a bit like I think it looks like a clothing catalogue, a little bit, the cover. Do you know what I mean? For a posh brand. What do you think? Do you agree with that?
Yes, you might have something there. Yes.
Anyway, at the top it says 20 years on and Rose is so trivial. That's so shallow.
Sorry.
20 years on and Rose is still missing. So can I just ask you before we get into the substance of it, were there other titles that you thought? Was there a lot of arguments? Because it's not. Yes. It's also not 2:15, it's 2:15, all in lower typeface. Just explain about that.
Well, it had various titles through the years I was working on it, which is quite some time. And I would try out one title and another title, and none of them was quite right. And at one point I wanted to call it Only a Day, which is a lyric from a song that features in the story. And I liked that, but then the David Mitchell book One Day came out around that time, and it was just too similar, so had to think again. And in fact, this title came from my editor, so it's unusual for me to
have
a title.
God bless the editor.
Yes. thank you, David Fickling.
So David Fickling, who was on the Radio 2 Art Show with me just a few days ago. What an extraordinary character he
is. I know, yes. And so it's unusual for a book to have a title that's not mine, but this, once he said that, there were a group of us sitting around the table and we all went, oh, yeah, that's good. Yes, that's a little bit unusual.
Because the title is very important, the cover is very important. Yes. Just explain then what happens at 2:15 on the Wednesday afternoon in question.
Well, that refers to an August day 20 years ago, when the sister of the main character left the house or was taken from the house, disappeared, aged 18, and what happened to her has never been found out. So the book is about the effects on the family of this missing girl, especially the effects on Anna, who is one of the main viewpoint characters, who was only 13 at that time.
Okay, just so let's just talk a bit more about Anna then, because as you say, we see an awful lot of the book through her eyes, and she's the younger sister looking up at her older sister, and the older sister is cooler and looks more fabulous, looks great in clothes, and she's sort of very angsty about that. And I thought it was very and it's a very interesting relationship that you've got there, and I think a number of younger sisters will read that and go, This is the way it is. This is the way it is. Just explain that whole family setup, because the more we read into the book, obviously it becomes quite a complicated family. Without giving anything away, tell us as much as you can.
Okay.
Explain Anna, the family Anna, setup.
Family setup. Yes. Well, there is Anna, aged 13, Rose, aged 18, the parents, and the mother became an important viewpoint character. In the first draft I wrote, it was all Anna's story. But gradually, as I went through many, many drafts, and I thought the mother's story was interesting as well, and that's why I decided to go back to the 1960s and to her teenage years. And so there are various traumatic events that happened in her adolescence that come into the story.
And as Jo Wiley said when she was doing her review earlier, there are a number of moments where you sort of gasp out loud and go, oh, really? Got to keep reading, got to find out what's happening here. 2:15 on a Wednesday afternoon is Linda Newbury's new book. It's the Radio 2 Book Club choice. Rebecca, what did you make of this then?
Yeah, well, for me, the book was primarily about a family trying to move on from the disappearance of their daughter, Rose. And I really like the way the story develops. You do it very cleverly using flashbacks and the way that secrets are gradually revealed, you know, and it does make you want to carry on reading. I think the family dynamics, you wrote about fantastically well. I'm a younger sister myself. I've got an older sister. And the relationship between Rose and Anna, as you mentioned, Simon, was spot on. And also, like, the way, for instance, you know, Anna goes back to her family home and she regresses and she becomes a young child again, all that is just, you know, I still go through that now. The Anna character is particularly interesting, I thought. You're on her side, but I also found her quite annoying. She's a bit flaky. And Sandra, her mother, was not a lot better. Also quite flaky. And I'm interested in, did you set out to make the two main female characters like that?
Yes, I did. I wanted Anna to be quite prickly, quite defensive, and for her to feel a bit stuck at the age of 13. She always looked up to Rose on how to behave, what attitudes to have, and she feels somehow she'll never be as good as Rose. She used to paint, but she stopped that because she thought Rose was better. And so, yes, I wanted Anna to be quite a prickly character, and that's a bit of a gamble, because, you know, maybe the readers would just dismiss her, but I don't think the reader should necessarily like the main character without reservation. I think at times Anna's quite infuriating, and I expect readers will think so.
Matt Williams, what did you make of 2:15 on a Wednesday afternoon?
The first word that sprang to mind when I was reading this book was dark, and that's a very good thing for me. I like books like that. The sibling relationship, we've already spoken about Anna and her elder sister, where Anna's desperately trying to impress this elder sister, feeling constantly inadequate. But at the centre of the book for me was secrets. And I'm going to be very, very careful how I tread here about revealing anything, obviously. But I, like Rebecca, found some of the characters, and I'm really heartened that you said you deliberately made them infuriating, because there were points where I was reading the book, howling at the book, just tell him, it'll be fine, just tell him. But the book for me explored the impact that having secrets has on the person who's keeping those secrets. Because, again, I'm not going to reveal anything, but there's one character who everyone thinks is going mad. But there is a secret at the centre of that. And I wonder whether... was secrets something you wanted to explore in this book?
Oh, yes, definitely. Yes, and the silence around all these secrets and the fact that this family sort of copes with the trauma of the loss of Rose by not ever talking about Rose, and the mother even more so. So, yes, the sort of buttoned-upness of them was going to be crucial,
As the book went on, Sandy, the mother, I warmed to her more and more. I was still howling at Anna towards the end. Please! Just tell him.
That's good. If you can make people howl at your book and shout at your book, it's like shouting at the television. People are so involved in the characters that they're actually taking... It's just a book, though.
I know, thanks.
It's not real. It's just a story. Yeah. What are you going to do next, Linda? What's next on your plan?
I've started another adult novel, which I'm very eager to get on with, and I have a new book for quite young children coming out in November.
And what's that called?
The Brocken Spectre.
Okay. Linda Newbury's book is 2:15 on a Wednesday afternoon. There's still a chapter online if you want to go and read it. We're going to announce a new book club choice tomorrow at this time. Linda, thank you very much indeed. Wish you all the best with this.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
The very good news is that Novice Nige is back.
Yay!
We didn't have him last week. He's been on holiday. We've sorted it all out. He's looking tanned and refreshed. Actually, looking pale and feeble. But anyway...
Oh, thanks, pal.
Nash, yesterday, it's a Foodie Thursday from Radio 2, and yesterday was National Burger Day, and obviously we don't do food on Wednesday. We have to do burgers on a Thursday. So what are you going to tease us with here, Nash?
Well, the fact that was Burger Day, but also the fact we were in Scotland last week, I've got a little bit of a theme going for it, because I've used some Scottish mince in this dish and added a couple of classic Scottish ingredients, avocado and feta. And this recipe was created by Kiwi... Yeah, there's a certain... I know, you've missed that, haven't you? Not a lot. Recipe was created by Kiwi chef Peter Gordon, born in Whanganui on the west coast of the North Island, and to be found now at Providore's and Kopapa eateries in London. And he, of course, he's suggested we use New Zealand lamb, but why would we? Because as the summer goes on, British lamb gets even better and better, and there's some fantastic stuff coming from Scotland at the moment. And these are mule Scotch mules, which is a cross between a lowland ram and an upland ewe, and they are from the Dykes family, been farming at South Slipperfield, West Linton, Peebles for generations, and they were the stars of this year's BBC Lambing Live. That was both the Dykes and the lambs. And with names like Hamish Murdo and Rosie Dykes, I mean, they've got to be Scottish and farmers to boot. Scotch
on
lamb,
the lamb... On the Lambing Live, was there a winning lamb or a winning farmer?
It was, I think, more the fact that you could observe lambs being...
Yes.
Born, wasn't there like a competition?
Yeah. Rather than best delivery of the night.
No. Yeah. No, okay. Categories, yeah. No.
Yes. Yes. Look at the wellies on that, farmer. So there you go. Scotch lamb and beef both have PGI status, protected geographical indication, and the animals have to be born and bred in Scotland, quite rightly. And to complete this dish, there are spring onions, mint leaves, Worcestershire sauce. Do you say Worcestershire or Worcester?
I say Worcester.
I think it trades as both, doesn't it?
No, Worcestershire is what it says on the label, but everyone calls it Worcester.
I think you'll find it's Worcestershire sauce, mate.
It's Worcester sauce, yes.
But Worcestershire... Yeah, I just asked.
You're not allowed to say Worcester sauce.
No, I just bet most people do. It's sometimes people say, oh, I was really specific about that. And you go, I think you meant specific, didn't you?
Yeah.
But I don't correct them. I don't correct them about Worcestershire sauce either.
It's difficult to say, that's why. That's why we call it Worcester sauce.
Yes, yeah. And the other ingredient, tomato ketchup. TK. The burger sits on a thinly sliced beef tomato, which is a big tomato. It doesn't have to be a beef one. The reason it's called beef, because basically you could eat all of it, because it didn't have the big pithy bit in the middle, so like a piece of beef steak.
This is shaping up to be the best thing you've ever done.
Let's hope so. And that came in a charred bun, topped with a dollop of avocado and feta mash, which I've made with mayo, mustard. I've opted for Dijon, lime zest and juice. And we've got some interesting things to pair with it on the drinks front. The other only two other ingredients you'll need are olive oil and lettuce and maybe a touch of seasoning.
Can I just ask you about the bun? Right, because the two best burgers that I've had recently, both have had a brioche bun, which is slightly sweeter. And I just wondered what your opinion of that was, whether that was a coincidence or whether that's a really good idea.
No, well, it's not. Funny enough, one of the buns I've used is a sweeter brioche style as opposed to a rustic farmhouse one, which I like because I thought it had more flavour, particularly when you've char-grilled it. But here, let's find out.
What a tough show this is. Was that lemonade you did?
Yeah, it is my soft drink version.
Excellent soft drink choice. We'll give you the drinks in just a moment. But having given us all the ingredients... Tell us what we have to do to make our burgers just like yours.
And Matty's going to do the drinks while I'm doing this.
I'll just distribute
so Simon can try both of them. I'd be very grateful. I started off by using my hands, which I always like to do in the kitchen, to mix the Scotch lamb with the Worcestershire sauce, spring onions, shredded mint leaves and tomato ketchup, which I then... And also, I test drove... Because you can use brown sauce or a mixture with the Worcestershire sauce, but I didn't. I just went for the Worcestershire because I think it worked better and was less viscous and gave it a little bit more kick. So there you go. And what I did, I divided that mix with the lamb and everything in it into four portions, rolled each out until... I've already done them in your little bowl there, and you can... help yourself, whatever. Here it is, Rebecca. Sorry about that. You've got two little... bread buns there to try. That's the idea.
Life stage directions.
Yes. So I divided my four portions, rolled them out until they're about a centimetre thick, and I popped these patties into the fridge to firm up. I did it overnight. You can do it. You need at least 2 hours. It just gives it a little bit of substance, a bit of base, which is important. And the avocado mix I made more recently is I didn't want it to discolour. Started out by mashing up the flesh of one avocado with the lime zest and juice of one lime before adding a good dollop of mayonnaise, teaspoon of Dijon mustard. Use whatever you want. If you want to use whole grain or English, whatever you prefer. And 50 grams of crumbled feta sheep's cheese. Nice and sharp and slightly salty, so I didn't need to add any extra salt at all. Cook my lamb patties on a griddle. Over a type of medium high-ish heat, because what I wanted to get was that lovely browned, that umami blackened exterior, and yet to keep the interior still nice and pinkish. That's improvised, whatever you wish. You could do it on a barbecue, which, as Kev, our engineer, said to me, if you're going to do a lamb burger, do it on a barbecue. Very good. So, boom, boom.
Now, that's Trev. That's from Trev, not Kev.
No, Trev. Yeah,
carry on like that, they'll all be off.
Sorry, did I say Kev? I'm sorry, Trev. I'm so sorry.
This is his last show.
I was doing so well.
So we can do it on our own next.
Sorry, Trev. So, yeah, you can use a barbecue or a frying pan. And it was about those were done for 3 minutes each side. And then I also toasted the cut surfaces of my burger buns before laying on a crisp lettuce leaf, followed by thin slices of the tomato, which I'd mixed with olive oil, salt and pepper, and a few more shredded mint leaves. And on went my lamb patty, followed by a dollop of my avocado mash, before gently pressing down the bun on top. So there you go. And I served them up with a soft drink. I mean, a lime cordial would work well as a soft drink, but I've got a lemmy lemonade because it's nice and lemony. But then I've got an interesting Scottish beer to go with it.
Yeah, the Scottish beer is very good.
Mm.
Tell us about the beer.
I thought it was good. No, good story. It's a Scottish toasted oak IPA, India Pale Ale, from Innis & Gunn. It's 5.6%, and it replicates the taste of IPAs from the 1800s when... India Pale Ale was first appeared. It's been aged in oak casks and percolated through oak chips. And Innis & Gunn was quite an interesting experiment originally because it was using beer in casks that were going on to age whiskey. And rather than throw the beer away, they started bottling it. So it's how the company developed. Or if you want, as I say, a soft drink, you could go for a lime cordial or a lemonade, as we've gone. But it's a proper lemonade with lots of lemons in it.
Oh, excellent. Well, you've stopped. OK, I thought there was more food detail to come, but anyway, here comes the assessment then from Burgermeister,
who knows his burgers. I do love my burgers. This is excellent, Nigel. What a way to kick off after the summer.
Hooray, yes.
Brilliant, super stuff. I'll tell you what wins it for me is the lime. I wasn't expecting that at all, and it's a great... Yeah, it really cuts through. It's excellent. I love the IPA as well. I had some of that in Edinburgh when we were up there last week. It's really great. Yeah.
Let's see what Rebecca makes.
Yeah, and you have the two buns. That's what I was also intrigued to see whether
before.
So what's the difference between the buns?
Well, one of them is a more of a rustic, thicker farmhouse bun, and the other one is like a brioche, buttery with sesame seeds on the top.
It's not sweet though, is it?
It's sweeter. Sweet. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I didn't pick that up.
No, you're on the business side. It's fine.
The burger is amazing. I mean, that is one of the best burgers I've ever had, and it goes so well. We wouldn't have thought it was an obvious combination with avocado and feta.
Yeah,
just
and mint.
It goes so well together. And yeah, I agree with Matt as well. The lime just adds that sharpness that goes really, really well with the meat. So well done.
Thank you.
Well,
and you've also some sliced jalapeno peppers, which are an option to go with them if you want, just add a little bit of oomph.
So here's the thing. If you've got friends coming around for a bite to eat, not a barbecue or something, you're entertaining, would you ever serve them a burger?
Yes, I would. Homemade burger. Yeah, definitely. And all the bits to go with it. But lots of side, which the joy of this dish is that there's so many other elements to it, as we've just alluded to. And I think that's the point. You can see that it's, you know, it's everything's homemade. You can even make your own bread if you so wish. But the key is that you could do it and you can see that a lot of thought's gone into it and hopefully the flavour. A good burger is a piece of culinary art.
And do you think knife and fork or pick it all up at once?
Oh, I think I'd just get stuck in. Use your fingers.
Because some of them are assembled so high and piled. So it's like a skyscraper
version.
Yeah,
it's impossible to eat
with
your fingers.
It's very, very difficult.
Yeah, well, you end up wearing it. But one of my top tips is if you cut your tomatoes too thick and you make your burger too chunky, you will risk dislocating your jaw. So, you know, as you cram it all in. So look at me as though that did happen.
Keep them thin.
Probably did, yeah.
Well, you dislocated your jaw on the big fat tomato.
Well, I didn't, but, you know, but if you have, if you try, if you think and get a whole burger in, like desperate damn stuff, that.
Mm. Like a Scooby snack.
Yes.
That's the way it goes. Did you have another top tip or was that your only top tip?
Yeah. As if you're unsure, say whether to use Worcestershire sauce, then you can use brown or a combination of both, whichever.
What was, this, but what it was gives, the sauce again?
Worcestershire. Worcestershire, where the county comes from, the cricket ball comes from Worcestershire.
I had a lovely burger the other day with bacon and maple syrup on it. It worked really well.
Yeah, I mean, and you see now, I mean, burgers, the burger shacks for dirty burgers, for a lot of restaurants and eateries around Britain, which are really doing well with those. But again, a good burger is a great thing. A poor one is just tastes of profit.
Could we do this again next week?
We could if we weren't doing 40 cloves of garlic brine chicken. Boom, boom. Bring your toothpaste and your toothbrush.
How many?
40.
Per person?
Could be. You could smear them all on. It'll be a very messy, smelly Joe Wiley, poor her next
all
week.
All the details of our lamb burgers with avocado and feta mash will be on our website. Good luck trying to find it. Just tweeted a picture and it's really, really worth the effort. Look out for that. Nigel, thank you very
thank
much
you.
Indeed. Well, that's it. More in a week's time. Don't forget you can download the Confessions podcast, available this and every Friday. Don't miss out on any of the fun and games, it says here. Anyway, thanks.